One of the most famous episodes that ever took place on a Yom Kippur was Yom Kippur in the year 1848. The place was a city called Vilna. The main protagonist was a man who is known as Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Rabbi Yisrael Lipkin. What exactly happened that day is not completely clear. Many versions of the story exist. Essentially, it was a plague, cholera. It was an epidemic. Many people were sick. There was fear for their lives. Maybe there was even a fear from the larger community, from the non-Jewish community, as was reported in at least one of the versions of the story. The story has been told by rabbis. It's been told by people who write fiction. It's been told by biographers. However, we don't know what really happened. One version of the story is written by a man named David Frischman. And he tells how, and again, this is clearly fiction as he tells it, which he probably believes is based upon certain facts. He made the story famous in an essay which was called Shlosha She'achlu, and Frischman was not an observant individual, and most likely what he's going to tell us, that the rabbi made the people break the fast, was the thing which he liked about the story. But the way that he tells the story, the rabbi together with two of the Dayanim, he describes him as an elderly rabbi. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter at that point was not all that old. He was 38 years old at the time, and he was not the rabbi of the town. He was not the rabbi of Vilna. Vilna actually never did have a rabbi, or a Rav Ha'ir, ever since the passing of the Vilna Gaon, who himself was not a rabbi of the city. He had no official position. He wasn't a rabbi. He wasn't a dayan. He wasn't a Rosh Yeshiva. He had no official position. But after the passing of the Vilna Gaon, it was determined that nobody can possibly now be the rabbi of Vilna. There were various dayanim who had positions, but Rav Yisrael Salanter was not one of them. Over here it tells about how he stood up and said, now's the time to break the Torah. And it says that they took cups, filled them with wine, took cake, made kiddush, and thereby the fast was canceled. Professor Louis Ginsberg, in his book Students, Scholars, and Saints, someone who looks for it will find it on page 184 or 185, he tells over the story and he says, I'll read, in the year of the frightful cholera epidemic, Salanter, after having taken counsel with a number of physicians, became convinced that in the interest of the health of the community, it would be necessary to dispense with fasting on the Day of Atonement. Many a rabbi in his large community was inclined to agree with his view, but none of them could gather courage enough to announce the dispensation publicly. I'm skipping a little bit. When he saw ever that none of them would act in this case, he thought to his highest duty. He affixed announcements in all synagogues, advising the people not to fast on the Day of Atonement. Knowing, however, how reluctant they would be to follow his written advice, he, on the morning of the Day of Atonement, at one of the most solemn moments in the service, ascended to the reader's desk after addressing a few sentences to the congregation, in which he commanded them to follow his example. He produced some cake and wine, pronounced the blessing over them, and ate and drank. One can hardly imagine what moral courage and religious enthusiasm this action of his required from a man like Salanter, to whom obedience to the Torah was the highest duty. Many years later, he used to dwell on this episode and thank with great joy his Creator for having found him worth to the instrument of saving so many lives. In a footnote, he notes, footnote 18, he says, Mark, who we'll come to soon, gives us a somewhat different version of this incident, but the one given in this essay is on the authority of the author's uncle, Reb Leib Rashkis, whose reliability cannot be questioned, as he was a pupil of Salanter. Now, of course, the problem with the pupil of Salanter is that he was not necessarily there, which means rather he's telling over a story which he heard. But again, it matches up pretty much with the story which was fiction, which we heard. In both of them, we have the rabbi getting up the differences in the previous story, which was told by Frischman in the fictional account. There were two dayanim who got up with him over here, although all the rabbis were afraid, and only Rav Yisrael Salanter is the one who gets up. But we have a third source, and that is Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein, the author of the Torah Tumimah. In his memoirs, which are called Makor Baruch, he also tells the story, but it's really interesting because he sort of only gets here because he was telling a different story about Yom Kippur. Also, the year which is given here is not the correct year. I would just assume that there was a mistake in terms of the printing. But he says, Hadavar Hayah B'Shanat Tafresh Lamid, that would have been 1870 as opposed to 1848, which is a huge difference. Bishanashar aras hachalira shalat bevilna. So he describes how Rav Yisrael Salanter makes this decision that because of the terrible plague, it is appropriate to break the fast to eat on Yom Kippur. And he says, Va'az Allah habamata bebeit hakneset hagadol devilna biyom kippurim. He climbs up onto the bima in the large shul of Vilna on Yom Kippur, la'achet tefilat shacharit, hagon hanadav Yisrael Salanter, ve'ito imo shnei mori hora'a nodim bevilna, and comes with him two of the judges, which actually is very similar to Fishman's version of the story. And then he says, B'shem Hashem of Rishut Torateinu HaKdosha, and I'll skip a little bit over here. He says the most important thing is, V'chai b'hem v'lo shem ud b'hem, onu matirim shelo latanot hayom. We hereby give permission that people do not fast today. And then it says, Hora'a umudim aleinu leinei kol kahal, v'gam ta'amu minei mitika ma'se'ofa. It says that he, in fact, makes kiddush. He also mentions the kiddush over here, and says that he also tastes some food along the way. Ulaman tukubal horato halacha lamase, in order to assure that people accept his ruling, lakach kos yayin, he took a cup of wine, v'kadesh alav, v'yesh mimenu hu'u morei hora'a, he and the various dainim all drank from the wine, amdim alav leinei kol Yisrael, v'gam tamu minei mitika ma'aseh afan, they also tasted the various cakes, which was over here. So essentially we have now three different sources which tell us what happened on that day. And I want to begin, I'm going to come back to some of the other sources momentarily, but I just want to pause for a moment. One of the dramatic points over here is this fact that he says kiddush. But here's a real simple halacha question. Does one say kiddush if one breaks the fast on Yom Kippur? The Shulchan Aruch rules, Cholish Achal, this is Siman Tav Resh Yud Chet Sif Yud, Cholish Achal B'Yom HaKippurim, B'Yashev Da'ato, B'Nyan She'Yechol L'Varech, Tzarech L'Azkir She'Yom HaKippurim, B'Birkat HaMazon, Shema Ya'alev Yavo B'Vnei Yerushalayim. All that's mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch is not a kiddush, but rather that if one already has eaten and has to say B'Birkat HaMazon, then one should mention that it is Yom Kippur as well. The Magen Avraham actually brings up the question of kiddush in the same source, Tav Resh Yud Chet. He tells us that a person who eats, he says that it would seem to him that v'gam ein tzarech l'kadesh, there's no necessity to make kiddush, and he quotes a Rav Avram Katz, cited in the Shibbolei Aleket, that says, kevin shahayom goram lo isur, that the kedusha, the holiness of the day of Yom Kippur, causes there to be a prohibition. But it's the pikuach nefesh gorim lo heter, which means he's not eating to celebrate a holiday, he's eating to save his life, and therefore he says there's no kiddush was ever instituted on such a day. Bahavli deit kechol, but it's, for him it's like a weekday. Ein bo kiddush, v'lo lokos, v'lo skatar, b'birkat hamazon. So even those who claim that even birkat hamazon, one wouldn't say anything. If one goes through and looks at the Mishnah Berurah, he rules this way as well. V'al kol panim kiddush bevaday ein lo lasot yesh lash bracha levatala. And in the Shartzion, he quotes the Magen Avram, and he quotes the Matar Ephraim, and he quotes the Shulchan Aruch Harav, and he quotes the Chai Adam, which is a pretty good group of achronim. I'll add one more achron, which it would be interesting to note, and that's the Aruch HaShulchan, the father of the Torah Tamima. He also says that there would absolutely be no kiddush in such a case. But then the Mishnah Berurah in the Shartzion adds one more half a phrase, and he says, "Va'ayin b'chidushi Rav Akiva Eger," and take a look and see what Rav Akiva Eger says. So if one looks at the chidushi of Rav Akiva Eger in this exact source as well, Tafresh Yud Chet Sif Yud, over here he brings down an opinion that he believes that one does say kiddush, but I just have to add one more element to it so that it will make more sense. He goes, Efshir Zerak be Yom Kippurim da Alma. A regular Yom Kippur, you wouldn't say Kiddush. The Kiddush Yom to Drabon and Lo Tiknu Klal. Kiddush be Yom Kippurim, because he certainly wouldn't say one on Yom Kippur. They never instituted it. Aval be Yom Kippurim Shechal be Shabbat, but on a Yom Kippur that came out on Shabbat, and it's here we need to pause. Because if we go look up in a calendar, and we look what day of the week was Yom Kippur in 1848, and lo and behold, we will find out that that year Yom Kippur, in fact, was on a Shabbat. So over here, he continues to say that if Yom Kippur was on a Shabbat, then one would say Kiddush because of the Shabbat. So that becomes very interesting, because would it be possible then that Yisrael Salanter actually was following the ruling of Rav Akiva Eger? Now, why that would be more than a possibility, I'm going to pause for a couple of moments, and we're going to come back to this. When I mentioned before that there are other versions of the story, there are other people who actually tell us about eyewitnesses. Now, you note, of course, that the version, which was a fictional version, no eyewitnesses were offered along the way. When we looked at even the story that Louis Ginsberg tells us, he tells us that he heard it from his uncle, who was a student of Rousseau Solander, but that doesn't necessarily tell us what he heard directly. All that it says that he himself is great authority, but it doesn't tell us exactly what it is that he heard, or for that matter, what he told him. That people believe that Rousseau Solander said Kiddush, that's clear from Frischmann's account. On the other hand, the Torah Tamima of Baruch Epstein, he also doesn't tell us exactly where he heard this from. So what we have is a number of people who are telling us, based on what we can call hearsay, that in fact he said Kiddush. But we have other sources, and one of them I'll get back because I had mentioned it briefly earlier, and that was somebody whose name is Yaakov Morek. Yaakov Morek wrote his memoirs in Yiddish, and they were later translated into Hebrew. I have a copy of them over here, and it's called Memechitatam Shel Gedolei Hador. Biografiot, Sipurim, Amirot, Vesichot Chulin Shel Gedolei Yisrael B'dor HaKodem. And we're told that this fellow, this Yaakov Morek, owned an inn that a lot of the great rabbis used to come and on vacation, and he tells us that he knew Rav Yisrael personally. He came to visit his inn, and he tells us that Rav Yisrael, he had heard him speak numerous times, and he had helped him personally, and then he tells us the following about this particular event. He writes, let me pause for a moment and tell you over a story that people say about Rav Yisrael. That the year that the cholera epidemic broke out, but Yom Kippurim, on Yom Kippur, Asur Rabbi Yisrael, Kiddush Bereit HaKnesset, Hagadol BeVilna. People tell over the story that he said Kiddush in the large, great shul of Vilna. Kidei Shakal Lo Yirtzeh Latanot, in order to convince people not to fast. V'lo Sha'a LeMechoteim Shel Morei HaRabbi Vilna. And here he gives us another piece of information, that he didn't listen to the instructions of the rabbis in Vilna. That means they were not with him. This story is entered into the literature. But to tell the truth, this is just a legend. I once talked about somebody who's better known as the Rashash. One of the commentaries in the back of the Gemara is this fellow, the Rashash, who Mivilna, who says, I was there at the time when this happened. And the way that he told the story, it went like this. On the day before Yom Kippur, Tzivur Yisrael, b'haskamat ha-motzim, with the approval of the very Mori Tzedek, the various Dayanim, v'af hidbikmo da'ot b'kol beit ha-knesset, and he put signs up in all the shuls, sh'machmar ha-machala ha-sholetet lo yimur piyutim, that because of the terrible illness which is spread around, people should not say the piyutim. These are additions that got added onto the davening at various stages in history. V'katzru b'tfilot, and they should make the prayers shorter. Ad kama she'efshar, as much as possible. U'limatzei ba'avir chofshi, and as much as possible, people should stay outside in the fresh air. U'bate kneset ha'ktanim, and on the small side shuls, which he calls the shtibalach, shal kol beit kneset, yachinu prusot lekech, they should prepare some food, pachot mishir. So here he adds in a couple of things which will fit into, I would say, a larger halacha consensus, that he rather tells people shorten the davening. There's no kiddush took place. He has food prepared outside because they're in the middle of an epidemic. Tells people to spend time outside, and if they need food, there will be food there. And it says that all that he did is that he climbed up on the bima. And all that he did that was so revolutionary, and you can decide that this is truly revolutionary, is that he said that if you don't feel, you don't need to talk to a doctor. Rabbi Yisrael spoke to plenty of doctors beforehand, and he said you don't need to go ask a doctor again. Doctors have been consulted. If you don't feel, go into the side room. Go and take something to eat. But he warned them to eat in what we would call the shiurim, that you should only eat a smaller amount of food within a large amount of time, so therefore it would not halachically be considered eating. In order that he not do something which would be breaking a Torah law. When he went down from the bima, and then one of the greatest of the dayanim there, Rav Betzalel, got up, Cohen got up, umachab b'shem hamotzim, and he gets up in front of, in the name of all the dayanim, ala heter shetir lachomi blu l'shol rofe, how he could have allowed people to go and eat without asking a doctor. Avu b'met lo tam Yisrael klom, but the reality is Rav Yisrael did not eat anything. So over here we have a whole other version of the story by an eyewitness. Of course, one always has to wonder, does the eyewitness have some kind of an agenda? He has definitely taken Rav Yisrael's behavior from being far more radical. And again, we have to wonder which story actually took place. But this is much easier to defend. Here the big issue would actually be two issues. One issue would be, he's saying you don't have to ask a doctor, which is not such a big issue. Why? Because he already consulted with the doctor. There's an epidemic. There's a cholera epidemic. The doctor said somebody who feels weak needs to eat. Okay, you don't have to ask on an individual basis. This is what's going on now. You don't need to ask on an individual basis. And that's the way we're presented with the problem. The other problem, which I think we could discern as well, is that the dayanim were not consulted. Rather, Rabbi Yisrael said, on my authority, I already spoke to doctors, everybody else can go and eat. Although I just will note is that what has been accomplished now is Rabbi Yisrael's behavior now fits far closer into normative rabbinic behavior in the sense, eat less than the amount, he doesn't make kiddush, there is no public desecration, as it were, of Yom Kippur, or perhaps not desecration, perhaps we can call it breaking Yom Kippur, but in order to save people's lives, which obviously is not to be considered a desecration. There was another eyewitness there, who tells us what happened, and this eyewitness is Rav Yitzchak Lipkin, Rav Yisrael Salanter's son, who writes in a memoir about his father. It says that Rav Yisrael gathered together a whole bunch of young scholars to help him, and it says they actually went and he rented hospital beds, and he got all kinds of things ready in case there would be a need for the house. It says there are 1,500 beds he went and he rented. And when he talks about the exact episode, he writes, Be'eta chalira lo aleinu kishaba yom kippur v'yadua shuhitir likach pachot pachot mikashir. That, as is well known, he allowed each person to eat what we would call less than the shir, which matches the other eyewitness. So essentially we have two eyewitnesses saying that he had them eat less. It was only decided the day before. And is well known, he got up publicly and said, that he essentially accepts upon himself responsibility for this. And then it says, and I'm not going to go into all of the nuances, and there's a lot of reading between the lines, but I'll read it in Hebrew. V'tzireif l'kula the sniff, ha'chatzi shir me'a akum shelo yamru asheba avur emunat Yisrael aviyu alein chas v'shem acholi lo aleinu v'otz snifim. That one of his considerations were that the non-Jews around would not think that this plague somehow is involved in the Jews, and that's why they were doing a lot of the work out there in order to try to help as many people as possible. We're not told over here if he himself ate. We're not told over here if he made kiddush. All that we're told is that he encouraged people to eat less than the proper amount. Although I do want to stress that if one did make kiddush, then what would go with the kiddush would be eating a proper amount because of ein kiddush ela b'makom suda, although one could claim that this would have been an exception. So we have two people or eyewitnesses telling us that never happened. But there's actually another tradition which may very well go back to another person who was an eyewitness. Now, I just want to stress again, Rav Yisrael Salanter's son was 8 years old, although he may very well know what happened, or again, sometimes when the stories are told afterwards, they're told in a way, just like the Rosh Hashanah, that now they fit a little bit better into the consensus of the rabbis, of what is normally done. The other source that I would like to quote is, perhaps I'll quote something out first. Before we get to another potential eyewitness, and I want to be careful about that, we have a tradition which goes all the way back to this Rav Bezalel Cohen. It's mentioned by a number of people. His writings in this context are mentioned in the Mishnah Berurah, they're mentioned by Rav Zevin in his Modim B'Halacha. He wrote a book called Reshit Bikurim, and he makes an astounding claim. He says that during the various cholera epidemics in Vilna, and he mentions three different ones, he said, three different ones which were over the Yom Kippur day. He said, nobody ever died. Everyone was completely fine. Nobody ever died. And this, therefore, should be an argument against anyone who says that we need to break Yom Kippur. So now that's really interesting because he was the one who identified as the individual who said, got up and said that, no, you know, how dare you do such a thing, and so on and so forth. So I do want to mention somebody else who may be involved at least in some way. And we said that nobody died. Well, we actually know historically about somebody who did die. There was a very young man at the time who later will become very famous, and the young man's name is Rabbi Yisrael Meir, and we normally speak of him as being Rabbi Yisrael Meir from Radin. Well, at this point, he was Yisrael Meir from Vilna. His father died from cholera a couple of weeks after Yom Kippur. So I can't say that he fasted. I don't know if he did fast or he didn't fast, but I do know that he died from this epidemic at this particular point in time. Now, the Chofetz Chaim, Yisrael Meir from Radin, the Chofetz Chaim actually had told over something about this story, which Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky tells over in his comments on the Shulchan Aruch, one who has a copy of Making of the Gadol by his son, Rav Nassim Kamenetsky. There's pages and pages and pages about this, including an argument to try to reconstruct what exactly happened based on all kinds of information. There are actually those, by the way, who have claimed that it never did, the whole story didn't happen. Rather, it were people who were fans of the Haskalah, quote-unquote, who put up the signs, and they signed Yisrael Salanter's name on it, and he had nothing to do with this whatsoever. What I could say is that it's factual that a little after the story, he ends up leaving Vilna and moving on, and his career then takes him in other places. But when he tells over the story, he says, Siperli Hagon Rav David Lieberwitz Shlita. Now, Rav David Lieberwitz is a grandson. His maternal grandfather was the Chafetz Chaim's brother. So Rav David Lieberwitz says that Sheshamahu Sipur Zeh Mibal Chafetz Chaim. That means he heard from the Chafetz Chaim, who, I'm going to say it again, was potentially another eyewitness. Yisrael Salanter's son was 8 years old, the Chafetz Chaim was 10 years old, and he has a whole, in the Making of a Gadol, he has a whole discussion in this context how old the Chafetz Chaim really would have been at this point. So his tradition is that Yisrael Salanter did allow the eating, and he himself ate. Okay, so that's important. His minu lebeitin the kila kodesh Vilna, v'danu sham eiza onesh yani shuhu al shahora abifarhesya hora akazu, and they gathered together after this, and they decided to try to determine what punishment he should get for doing what he did. Amar hagon v'yistrol lahem she'im him yachlitu odato eiza onesh yivsol kol hagitin shenichtavu bebeitin zeh. Yisrael Salanter said to them that if you punish me for this, now I just want to point out, Yisrael Salanter most likely over here is not defending his own honor. He's defending the feelings of all the people that he encouraged to eat because he felt that that was the right thing to do. During a plague, when the immune system is compromised and people stand the risk of dying, they need to eat, and he felt this was pikuach nefesh, and he himself ate according to this version of the story. And therefore, if he gets punished, then what's the feeling of all those other people? Before I continue with what was said over here, there's a second version of this, whereby the next day he gets up and he gives a shiur, which was so unbelievable, but not on this topic. Because if he would have spoken on this topic, then it would have been understood that he had to defend his psak, and he refused to defend the psak. Rather, he gave a shiur, trying to imply to all the others that he, in fact, was on very solid ground doing what he did. This fellow Mark, when he tells over about Rav Salanter, he said, he was by heads and shoulders the greatest rabbi in Vilna at that particular time, and he was as if he were the chief rabbi of the city, although again, even though he did not have a position of chief rabbi or for that matter, dayan. But what is it that he says according to the Chafetz Chaim? He said that if you punish me, I will ask you a question that you don't know the answer to based on how you've been doing gittin, how you're performing the divorces in Vilna. And essentially what's going to happen is I'm going to prove that all the gittin written here in the last 200 years have been pasul, are invalidated. The implication of that, of course, is that you will have dozens and dozens of dozens, about hundreds of people walking around Vilna who today are mamzerim because their mothers never did receive a proper get. And that was the threat of Yisrael Salanter. And according to this, he asked them the question that he had on the way that they do it. No one knew how to answer it. And that was the end of the discussion. And Yisrael Salanter walked out of the Beit Din and they did not do anything to him. Now, that's really quite surprising. But again, I just want to stress, this is told by a grandson of the brother of the Chafetz Chaim, and he said he heard it from the Chafetz Chaim himself. And I'll stress again, the Chafetz Chaim's father died during this particular plague of cholera, and the Chafetz Chaim was there at the time and probably is a better witness than a lot of the other people that we've been mentioning who heard hearsay from hearsay and hearsay. But I'll say it again, what actually happened, I don't know, but at least here we again have a version of the story that, if not making Kiddush, that he himself did eat. Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he relates to the story, he also says that Rav Yisrael Salanter completely canceled the fast in Vilna and had no one fast in Vilna. He took responsibility for it, but I'll come back to Rav Moshe in a moment. Before I get to Rav Moshe, let me add Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss was asked about Tisha B'Av, not Yom Kippur, and somebody who posed the question says, well, maybe there was also some kind of an epidemic at the time, which is more like a flu. And they said, maybe we should do like Rav Yisrael Salanter did and cancel the fast. And Rav Asher puts the brakes on and says, hold it a second. I don't know what happened. He goes, I can't judge stories. I can't use stories from storybooks to decide halacha. The only thing which really I can use is what rabbis said about this during the actual plague and how they use this in halachic discussions. And he himself, as I said, he moves away from this psak, although, again, now I'll note. What he does do is he quotes the Chatam Sofer, and he says the Chatam Sofer is something which should be considered. So let me tell you the Chatam Sofer, and then I'll go back and I'll tell you about what Rav Moshe Feinstein says about this. The Chatam Sofer addressed an outbreak of cholera in 1836, as opposed to Rav Yisrael Salanter's episode, which was in 1848. And essentially what the Chatam Sofer ends up saying that one should do during this particular episode is that one should eat less than the shear. That one eats a little bit, and therefore one can be proactive about this. If one drinks, one drinks coffee, one shouldn't put sugar in the coffee. One drinks tea, don't put sugar in the tea. If one eats or drinks soup, one shouldn't add any kind of spices to it. And rather, one should eat what you need to survive, but again, less than the shear, and we need to do this in order to keep people alive, but rather the approach is less than the shear. Now, as I said, it's interesting that both his son and the Rashash say, well, that's what Rishol Salanter did. It's essentially exactly the same as the Chassam Sofer, so that would be interesting. The Chassam Sofer was known as being the most important postuk of his time, and therefore that really becomes a very dominant opinion, and therefore what they're doing is they're taking the story of Yisrael and placing it within firm halachic tradition, and therefore essentially he did exactly what the Chatam Sofer had said to do in such a situation. When Rav Moshe Feinstein deals with this, as I said, he goes a little bit further, and he does tell over the story, and he says, V'yadua shagon v'yisrael salanter tziva b'sha shahaya machalata koli raha mitpashetet le'achol b'yom ikirim kol b'nei ir mishum shela revim yoter alu l'dabek b'hem av shubar im kadeh shelo yecholu, which means essentially he's saying, what he sees this as being an important precedent for is that if you are presently not ill, but if you don't do something, you will become ill, then on Yom Kippur you're considered to be ill. Which means he sees a potential illness, a real potential illness. He actually, the whole discussion here was about taking medication. That if you don't take this medication, you will become ill, then you can take the medication to avoid becoming ill. You don't have to wait to become ill, and then you break Yom Kippur. You're allowed to break Yom Kippur even because of a potential. And he uses the story, unlike Rav Asher Weiss, who said you can't use a story to rule on halacha, Rav Moshe Feinstein feels quite comfortable in terms of using this. So now, I want to repeat something that I said before. I have no idea what really happened. I don't know if any of us can ever figure out what happened. Again, we perhaps based on what I've brought, and there's other sources that I didn't bring, but perhaps based upon what I've said, you can form your own opinion. Do we believe the fictional account? Well, I would assume no, but the fictional account is supported by... Who should we start with? It's supported by the Torah Tumimah, and the Torah Tumimah says he got up and he made Kiddush. It's supported by other sources that says, again, he got up, Louis Ginsberg, heard from his uncle, who's a student of Yisrael Salanter. He got up and made Kiddush. So we do have one tradition of him making Kiddush. We have one tradition saying that he did not break the fast at all himself. Rather, he said, whoever is sick, they can go and eat in this side room. And the only thing that he did was saying, you don't have to ask the rabbis and you don't have to ask a doctor. We've already asked the doctors and I'm a rabbi and that's enough. So that was another approach, or by telling people to eat less than a shear, which again, less than the proper amount. We want to go back to something, and that's essentially this whole argument that Chatam Sofer uses, that it's best to use less than a shear. And I want to discuss a little bit about the history of that. Perhaps as the introduction is something which I'll bring two sources for. One is Rabbi Soloveitchik, who's quoting his father, and the other is Rabbi Soloveitchik's uncle, quoting his grandfather. Well, actually, in both cases, they're quoting Reb Chaim. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, is quoting his father Rav Moshe and saying what he was told by his father, and he writes as follows. This is found in Halachic Man, page 35. My grandfather, Reb Chaim Vibris, disagreed with the legal view that on the Day of Atonement, one feeds a sick person who's in danger of dying small amounts of food at a time, each amount less than the forbidden measure of food on that day. Rather, he instructed those who were taking care of the sick individual to serve him a regular meal, just as he would on other days. When my father was about to travel to Resin, a town close to Kovno, to take up a rabbinical post, Reb Chaim took him aside and said, I command you to follow my view regarding a sick person in danger on the Day of Atonement, for it's an absolute halachic truth. This law that Pikuach Nefesh, saving a life, overrides all the commandments, and its far-reaching effects are indicative of the high value which the halachic viewpoint attributes to one's earthly life. Indeed, they serve to confirm and nurture that value. Temporal life becomes transformed into eternal life. It becomes sanctified and elevated with eternal holiness. In a slightly different language, the Brisker of the Griz writes in his commentary to the Rambam of the Hilchos Shvisas Asur, Perek Bet, Hilchot Shvitat Asur, Perek Bet, Halacha Chet, V'nei Adoni Mori V'Rebi Agon Zatzal Reb Chaim Hayamor Uba B'chol Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana Kegon Makash Chalal Chadom Sheyachilu Oto B'Yom Kibrim Kol Tzarcho V'Lo Pachot Mikashir. And then he goes on for a couple of pages explaining what exactly is this position. But Reb Chaim did not accept this idea of eating less than a shear. And I just want to play a mental game for a moment. So if the story of Yisrael Salanter was instead told about Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim stood up in the shul of Brisk, if you prefer, instead of Vilna, and told everybody that this Pikuach Nefesh over here, it's not that I'm Mekil on Yom Kippur, I'm Machmir on Pikuach Nefesh, and there is a plague going on, everybody's weak, we don't know exactly how to fight it, and that was also part of the whole story. Their medical knowledge was very, very limited, and everybody needs to eat because everybody's in danger right now. So if Reb Chaim had said it, I think it would be a little bit easier for us to understand. So now, why was Reb Chaim so strong against something which seems to be pretty much a halachic consensus? In fact, if we go take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, Tafresh Yudchet, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Kishima achilin et ubarot, when you feed a woman who's pregnant, o atachola, when somebody who's sick. Now, just a warning that whenever you see the word sick in Jewish writings, you have to know what kind of sick. Is it chola sheyesh bo sakana, a person whose life is in danger? Or is this referring to a chola she'ein bo sakana, somebody whose life is not in danger? Somebody whose life is in danger, then we just have to think a little bit, you know, how should we be treating them? But nonetheless, it says here, when you feed somebody who's either pregnant or sick, kishmachilin et ha'ubarot o et ha'chole, machilin otam ma'at ma'at kidei shelo yitzdaref l'shiur. That when you feed someone who is pregnant or who is sick, you give them a little bit at a time in order that it not add up to the proper amount, which would be prohibited. That's what's ruled in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch takes it directly from the Torah. The Torah takes it directly from his father, from the Rush. The Rush takes it from the Ramban. The Ramban takes it from the Bahag. So that's a pretty good halachic lineage. However, there's a couple problems with this. One is there's no source in the Gemara for this, and I'll qualify that in a moment. Secondly, the Rambam and the Rif, they don't bring this. Now, what exactly is going on here? There is a source that talks about that what happens when somebody is sick and how is it that you're supposed to feed them. That source, where it talks about the discussion on Yom Kippur itself, says absolutely nothing about what we would call today shi'urim, eating less than the required amount. Rather, the source of shi'urim is a Gemara in Kritot, which is dealing with a completely different type of episode. It's talking about an individual, a woman, who's pregnant, and it says, hiricha, she smells something. What is it that she smells? She smells something not kosher, and she gets a craving. It says, if that's the case, then you were to feed her less than she would actually need. If she's in danger, she should eat more. What it's talking about is that a woman who has a craving, and you give her a small amount of time. Now, the Gemara in Yoma that talks about a woman who's pregnant, very similar, if not the same case, the Mishnah in Yoma says, "Uber shericha machilin oto ad shetashiv nafsha." You give her food until she feels better. Nothing. The Mishnah says nothing about lack of shear. It says, "Achole machilin oto al pi bikin." Somebody's sick, then you get a professional, you get a doctor to give an opinion, and then you would feed him ad shiomar dai, until he says, "I've had enough." Misha achol bulmus, somebody who has some kind of an eating disorder, says that you feed him ad shireinav, until he seems to regain his well-being. So the Mishnah gave three cases and neglected to say anything about give them shi'urim, give them less than the required amount in over a large period of time. In fact, the Gemara here as well doesn't say anything about it. Rather, what the Rush tells us is that we adopt the position by the non-kosher food to this case as well, and say that these are essentially the same cases, although one now can begin to argue. And actually, he takes two jumps. One jump is he says you treat a pregnant woman on Yom Kippur the same way that with kosher food as you would treat her with non-kosher food. Now, when a woman has a craving for non-kosher food, so I would say that's more of a psychological issue than anything else. And the Aruch HaShulchan actually spells that out for us. So one leap that it took is it took an attitude towards somebody with non-kosher food, but she's pregnant and maybe we're worried about some kind of damage. So give her a little bit of a taste and hope that that will deal with the craving. What does that have to do with Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur, this pregnant woman who wants or needs food, that may be because of a bona fide need. I mean, that may be something very, very different. One step further, even if you're going to say it's true by a woman who's pregnant, what does it have to do with a cholo, somebody who's sick? So in the logic of the Rush, as I said, quoting the earlier sources, no, but this way we can save them from breaking the Isser. So Reb Chaim's argument was, well, if you have a chola sheyesh bo sakana, a chola whose life is in danger, and as we see, life is in danger is even if potentially it will be in danger because of certain, either what's done or what's not done. So if the person is a chola, so then they're allowed to eat. It's a mitzvah for them to eat. I don't have to give them less than a shear. Less than a shear is the way that I avoid a problem. Let me say it a little differently. I give somebody less than a shear when essentially the eating that they're doing is wrong. When a woman is pregnant and wants to eat non-kosher food, that's wrong. It's still not kosher, but we're concerned and we give her to taste some of that food. For a sick person to eat on Yom Kippur is right, v'chai behem. And therefore, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said, excuse me, I think the Shulchan Aruch over here is not correct. The tradition that it's following, again, Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, ignoring the Rambam and the Rif, who don't rule this way, ruling like the Torah, ruling like the Rush, ruling like the Ramban, ruling like the Pahag, it's a very nice tradition, but Reb Chaim says it just doesn't follow what the Talmud Bavli actually says. And perhaps even there's a passage in the Rishonim that it doesn't follow. And therefore he rejected this, and therefore he commanded his son that when you rule on Yom Kippur, you always must rule. If somebody's sick, you give them food. You give them a meal. Don't play games with the Shiurim. Shiurim have nothing to do with Yom Kippur. Now for many people, that's going to come as a surprise. So, I want to introduce another character to our story. So far, we've had a number of different characters. We have Yisrael Salanter, and we met the Rashash. If you open up the back of the Gemara, you'll find that the Rashash is there, as I said. You'll also find, by the way, there's somebody else, Ben Aryeh, who's there, who's actually the father of Rev Yisrael Salanter. And there's somebody else who I want us to meet, and that is somebody by the name of Zundel from Salant. When Yisrael Salanter was very young, he was a prodigy. And his father, actually, now you realize, was actually a great rabbi. At the time, was a simple malamed. He was very, very modest. Later on, he becomes the rabbi of a large city called Telz. So Yisrael Salanter's father saw how talented his son was and how great he was in pilpul. He wanted to send him to learn with the Rebbe, who will teach him to learn in b'derech yishara, straight, logic, without pilpul. So he sends him off to a town called Salant, and he learns with a fellow named Rev Herschel Brody, who's the rabbi of Salant, who's also a very modest individual. And he learns with him. Now he's 10 years old. And while he's there, he's 10 years old, he spots somebody whose name is Rev Zundel from Salant. Rev Zundel carried himself like a regular guy, like a regular person. In later years, Rav Zundel will end up coming to Eretz Yisrael, where he will be declared the ruling posek of Yerushalayim, and his son-in-law, Rav Shmuel of Salant, will end up becoming the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. Rav Zundel Salant, as a young man, studied in Volozhin with Chaim Volozhin. When he got a little bit older and Rav Chaim Volozhin passed away, he traveled and to Posen, and he then learned with Rav Akiva Eger. So what's important to Rav Zundel of Salant, it was the Rebbe of Rav Yisrael Salanter. Rav Yisrael Salanter himself saw himself as being a student of the Vilna Gaon via Rav Zundel of Salant, via Rav Chaim Volozhin. That's how he has his Mesorah. Now, there's something which is interesting in this whole story, and I want to bring in another commentary, and that is the Netziv of Volozhin. Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he is the grandfather-in-law of Rav Chaim Brisk. Rav Chaim Brisk is actually a descendant of Rav Chaim Volozhin himself. He also then becomes the grandson-in-law of the Netziv, who himself is a grandson-in-law of Rav Chaim Volozhin. So therefore, both sides of the family are descendants of Rav Chaim, and they presumably will have all kinds of family traditions. That the Netziv tells us that the Magen Avraham wants to extend this idea of Shiurim not just to women who are pregnant, but also to women who had given birth. And the Netziv absolutely disagrees with this, and he tells us along the way in his discussion, he mentions a couple of things which I think that we will find interesting. One thing that he says is Vagam Ikar Adin Demachlin Pachot Mikashir Einu Muskam Afil Lachola Ladata Geolam Rishonim. This idea that we feed someone who's sick less than a shear, he goes, that's not an accepted point. There are many people who disagreed with this very idea. And he says, to extend it to a woman who just gave birth? He goes, where did that come from? And then he tells us in two different places. In one of the places, he tells us that he heard this from a fellow named Rav David Tevel. Rav David Tevel was also a student of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and he became the rabbi of a city called Minsk. And he tells us that Rav Chaim Volozhin ruled against Shiurim for the woman who gave birth, halacha lemaisa. So I want to put together, I think, all the pieces that I've already laid out. Let's just say that Yisrael Salanter did get up and he made Kiddush. How can he make Kiddush? You don't make Kiddush Yom Kippur. Well, it happened to be Shabbos this year. But who says you make Kiddush on Shabbos when it's Yom Kippur? Answer, Rav Akiva Eger. Who was his Rebbe? His Rebbe Zundel Salant. Who did Rav Zundel Salant learn with? He had two Rebbeim. One was Rav Chaim Volozhin and the other was Rav Akiva Eger. So therefore, it's quite probable that Yisrael Salanter would have known this tradition from his Rebbe, Rav Zundel of Salant. As far as the other point goes, that this idea that you don't necessarily follow Shiurim, that pikuach nefesh is so severe, you don't start, I don't want to use the word playing game, you don't start feeding less than Shiurim. No, if it's pikuach nefesh, it's pikuach nefesh. So I'm saying that was something which goes at least back to Rav Chaim Volozhin, maybe even back before that. And then if I ask myself, so where would Yisrael Salant have heard this from? So the answer is from his Rebbe, Rav Zundel of Salant. And therefore, both of these points that we can question, and as I said it before in passing, had Rav Chaim Brisk said this, I don't think we would have been all that surprised because of what we know to be his attitudes towards the fasting Yom Kippur. I'm just pointing out, again, I don't know what really happened that day. I don't know what Yisrael Salanter did, but I will point out a couple of things. If he was really concerned with this plague and he really felt that people needed to eat, it would make perfect sense to me that he himself would eat. Why? Because what would happen if somebody on Kippur said to you that I'm fasting no matter what, and you say, no, it's a mitzvah to eat. I'm not going to, I know, I have to fast. And they say, if it's so important to eat, why don't you eat? And you're healthy. And the only way they'll eat is if you eat, you're allowed to eat in Yom Kippur because your eating is facilitating saving somebody's life. If Rav Yisrael Salanter felt that the only way to get all the sick people to eat was if he ate himself, that would have been in his mind a mitzvah pikuach nefesh, and he would have eaten because that was saving the people's lives. So what I'm trying to point out over here is, again, we don't know what really happened. And maybe some of us are going to feel that those who were the eyewitnesses who told us the story and claimed that Rav Yisrael Salanter didn't eat, although his son never said that. All that his son said is they ate less than a shear. What we heard from the other eyewitness, the Rishash, also less than a shear, and says, again, from that, Mark says, no, he absolutely himself did not eat. On the other hand, we have a lot of people think that that he did eat, and certainly that he was telling people they needed to eat, including, it would seem to be, the Chafetz Chaim, including, it would seem to be, a whole bunch of other people. It could be, again, that there was an urban legend and everybody knew that something happened. Exactly what happened, we don't know, and it comes down to us in various versions. I'm just pointing out that if the version is true that he got up and made Kiddush, so then he was following his Rebbe's Rebbe, Rebbe Akiva Eiger. If it were the case that he got up and said, you don't even have to eat shurim, everybody just needs to eat right now, he would have been following his Rebbe's Rebbe, Rav Chaim Volozhin. So either way, I think we have a little bit more insight into this. As a postscript this year, which we do have a plague around us, and to keep in mind that there is a tradition from Rav Chaim, and from the Rav, that from Chaim, and the Briska Rav, and again, going back, the Netziv knows about it, and Rav Chaim Volozhin, that this idea of Shiurim is not necessarily a law by Yom Kippur whatsoever. It is a law by a woman who is pregnant, who has cravings, and therefore you give her a little bit to taste, and how that moves over to Yom Kippur, and then how that moves over to people that are sick. And again, it would be very important to make the distinction there between a chol she'ein bo sakana, chol she'yesh bo sakana. It could be that shiurim are the perfect thing to rule on when somebody really should be fasting. They really should be fasting, and they say, no, I need to eat. Okay, so have less than shiurim. But if somebody shouldn't be fasting, then it could be that the idea of shurim are unnecessary. And again, shouldn't be fasting if somebody's in a case of pikuach nefesh, which is either real and present danger or real potential danger. And in halacha, we look at potential danger as well. We break Shabbat for suffik pikuach nefesh. We eat on Yom Kippur because of suffik pikuach nefesh.